This is True News, the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. So help us God. I'm Rick Wiles. The 2022 Winter Olympic Games will open in 3 weeks in Beijing, China. Just 1 hour from Beijing, the port city of Tianjin is in total lockdown today. Two more cities are also in a COVID-19 lockdown. Together, the three Chinese cities have a combined population of over 20 million people. Doc Burkhart and I have some troubling and even chilling information to share with you today as we try to discern what is really happening inside China this week. Doc, this kind of feels February, March of 2020.
Right. And it's hard to believe that was 2 years ago, Rick. I mean, we were just coming back from Singapore a couple months earlier at the end of 2019 from a tech conference there.
And then Davos.
And then Davos right after that, beginning of 2020. And it was just then you started to hear some of these strange reports coming out of China, you know, of people getting sick and everything. And then within a few weeks, you started seeing videos pop out of people lying in the street, and then
Chinese, the fumigation,
right? The fog machines and the fog trucks going down the streets and everything. It seems like those things are starting to happen again in China.
Yes,
and it's an eerie time. So, as you said in the opening,
well, we'll take a look at this Voice of America story: China lockdown, third city locks down third city, raising affected to 20 million, and. The VOA story, we've got a quote from that article.
Right, so a third Chinese city has locked down its residents because of a COVID-19 outbreak, at least that's what they're saying, raising the number confined to their homes in China to about 20 million people. It wasn't clear how long the lockdown of Anyang, home to 5.5 million people, would last. Mass testing was being enforced, standard procedure whenever outbreaks pop up around the country. Another 13 million people are locked down in the city of Xi'an and 1.1 million in Yuzhou, with restrictions imposed on the port city of Tianjin. Only about an hour from Beijing, which is to host the Winter Olympics starting February 4th. A games official responsible for disease control, Wan Chun, said organizers are counting on the cooperation of athletes and officials to prevent an outbreak that could affect participation. But Rick, it wasn't that long ago where China was touting that they had pretty much beat COVID.
Yes.
I mean, they were having, you know, parties and fireworks displays and everything else, huge crowds of people showing up for events without masks. What's changed?
And they also, a few months ago, went to a zero tolerance, that if there was one case, they would lock down everything.
Right.
Which seemed extreme. I mean, you're going to lock down an entire city because one person has coronavirus? That's what the Chinese media told us months ago.
Right.
Remember, they started locking down the schools? They
yes.
wouldn't let the parents take the children home?
Yes.
Because one case in the school. But now there's more information coming out of China, and we're trying to figure out, is there something really, something we ought to be worried about, something that's very troubling happening in China, or are we being set up with another propaganda campaign coming out of China? We're going to show you some things, and we'll let you make up your own mind about what's happening. We mentioned how 2 years ago those eerie videos were being smuggled out of China, you know. That was one of the things that didn't make sense. We knew the Chinese communists censored everything in
right.
China, and yet these videos were getting released on social media.
Yes.
Showing the fog machines and the
people being welded into their apartments.
Yes, the doors being, the apartments being welded shut. And we're like, are you doing what? You're welding the doors shut with the people inside? Those are the kind of weird videos that were coming out of China 2 years ago.
Well, it's starting to happen again.
Yeah,
now,
so let's look at it.
So this first video clip we're going to show you, this is from about a week ago. And remember we talked about the fog machines and everything back at the beginning of the pandemic?
Mm-hmm.
They've brought them out of mothballs, Rick. Watch this.
Wait a minute, Doc. I saw more than a fog thrower there. One guy had a flamethrower.
Right.
What was that about?
I don't know. He was shooting flames at the street and then shooting flames at a door. Like I said, this was from about a week ago. This popped up. There are a lot of these types of videos that are out there. Here's a tweet that give you an idea here. A real militaristic vibe to disinfect the Shaanxi province shopping mall. Get ready for a visual slalom of similar muscle as Omicron devils totalitarian state and threatens efficiency in the public face of China. And so you had basically an army of people in hazmat suits going through with these fog machines, which I don't know what they do other than instill fear. I don't know if they actually get rid of the virus or not. But you'll see pictures like this of a dozen or several dozen people in hazmat suits going through an office building, through a mall. They brought out the the fog trucks again. We had that in the VOA article here earlier.
Have they done the purge sirens?
Now, I haven't heard that yet. Right. Haven't heard that yet. Now, one other thing that's happening, too, is there's been a real response. We didn't see this at the beginning of the pandemic at 2020. This is a video clip from CNN International, and Selena Wang, she's based out of Tokyo. She did a report on something that she's noticing that's happening in China right now, and I brought this to Rick's attention. See if you notice anything unusual about what's going on here in this clip.
Julia, it is stunning to see thousands of those students in full hazmat suit loading those buses to go to quarantine. But Julia, this is in line with China's zero COVID strategy. They've been doubling down on it, and it relies on extensive quarantine measures, lockdowns, and mass testings. This video from Anyang City is in China's central Henan province. After confirming a total of 84 COVID-19 cases, it is now putting its 5.5 million residents into strict lockdown. People are banned from leaving their homes except to get tested for COVID-19. Now, this outbreak in Anyang is linked to a college student who tested positive for Omicron after traveling from Tianjin, which is a city hundreds of miles away from Henan. And that outbreak in Tianjin is especially concerning to authorities in Beijing. This is a city with close proximity to the capital, just 30 minutes away from Beijing by high-speed rail. This is, of course, the host of the Winter Olympics, now just weeks away in Tianjin. After finding local transmission of Omicron cases, they are now mass testing its 14 million residents. There are 29 residential communities under strict lockdown. Residents cannot leave the city without special permission, but it's not just in these areas. We are seeing these local flare-ups in places across China, and we are seeing strict reactions in response to each one. We've been discussing what's happening in Xi'an. They've been under strict lockdown, and it's 13 million residents since December 23rd, and we're continuing to see a stream of complaints and desperate stories of people who are struggling to get basic necessities, food, and people who are struggling to get medical attention.
Doc, when I was a child, I don't recall ever saying, "Mom, did you wash and dry my hazmat suit last night?"
So, and there are, that was just the kids. There's tens of thousands of people that they're putting in the hazmat suits in certain provinces.
Is this real?
No, is it
real? We know that they paraded the children out in hazmat suits, but...
Is it real?
Is it real, or is it... a propaganda film?
That's, we look back at the beginning of 2020 and we see so much that we have to chalk up to what we consider propaganda at this point when we look back at things. But something that is different about this, the Chinese aren't very forthcoming with information in the first place, okay? And they like to control information. Of course, the Olympics are coming up And, you know, that has got to be a factor in how much information they're putting out there. But then we've started noticing some other stories popping up, Rick. Something that we didn't think about even, you know, a few days ago. Here's a story, Radio Free Asia. Take a look at this headline here. China, Xi'an under lockdown amid surge in COVID-19 hemorrhagic fever cases. All right, so now this is a new element in the mix here, Rick, hemorrhagic fever.
This goes back a couple weeks, just before Christmas.
Right.
And December 23rd.
We didn't catch this beforehand about the hemorrhagic fever. Authorities in the northern Chinese city of Xi'an have placed the city of 13 million under lockdown amid a sharp rise in the number of COVID-19 cases and fears over a recent outbreak of epidemic hemorrhagic fever.
Epidemic.
Yes.
Which means that it's spread throughout a region.
So now this is Radio Free Asia, and they have their own particular slant on things. Let's see what the communists themselves are saying about this. This is from Global Times. Xi'an reports hemorrhagic fever cases, but no need to panic, as medical experts urge quick vaccinations.
Well, wait a minute. Do they have vaccines for hemorrhagic fever?
Not that I'm aware of. And so why are they pushing quick vaccinations? And so it says since the beginning of winter, Xi'an, northwest China's Jiangxi province, has recorded a series of hemorrhagic fever cases, a natural epidemic disease with a high fatality rate. Now, these stories started popping out in December and through the end of the year. This is kind of a new element in the mix here, Rick, that even the communists themselves, the Global Times, you know, is definitely a communist outlet. They're not, you know, they're not hiding the fact that hemorrhagic fever exists.
Or they want you to know that it exists.
Right.
This is where I'm at.
That's where the propaganda is.
I've become so jaded by this stuff after 2 years of COVID propaganda that I question everything that is put out today. You know, 2 years ago, first 4 or 6 weeks of the pandemic, we here at True News, we were following developments in China very closely. We were showing our audience the strange videos that were coming out.
Right.
The mobile morgues, where they were crematoriums, where they're burning the bodies and things like that.
And the warehouse full of urns.
Yes.
Remember that?
Yes. And the body bags, all that kind of stuff.
And the satellite images of smoke from cities.
Oh, yes. That's
remember
right.
That?
And that's
they
right.
were determining that they were cremating bodies at a record pace.
And then, and then there was just one day that I just said, wait a minute. This stuff's too weird. There's something. There was one particular video of a man who fell down and began, you know, screaming he couldn't take it anymore. And I just looked at the video and I go, that is the worst acting I've seen in years, okay? And I remember thinking, this stuff is fake. This stuff we've been watching for a month or two, this is back in 2020, I thought, this stuff we've been watching is fake.
Okay.
So now, here we are, we're seeing part two of that movie. To me, it looks like part two.
Right.
It looks like the same movie. We've got the defoggers. We've got the people in hazmat suits. Look at the bad, weird, crazy stuff going on in China where the cities are locked down. It just has all the feeling of a remake of the first cheesy movie.
Right.
Which has me wondering, what are we being set up to believe? So let's go a little bit deeper in this and see what else they're telling us about hemorrhagic fever.
Well, yesterday on Steve Bannon's War Room, Dr. Robert Malone, who we've had the opportunity to speak with in preparation for the Greatest Reset movie, he appeared on Bannon's War Room yesterday. He had some things to say about the whole COVID shakedown that's going on, but then he also touched on this story that we've been talking about today regarding hemorrhagic fever in China. Let's listen to what Dr. Robert Malone had to say yesterday.
I want to cite Gert von den Bosch, Dr. Gert von den Bosch, a leading academic and industrial vaccinologist, who is my colleague, and I'll be doing an extended filming with him and Matthias in Spain shortly, just a few days from now. Gert has made the point now for months and months and months that vaccinating into a pandemic will drive the development of escape mutants that are resistant to vaccination. The CCP's practice has mirrored that of the Western world and has resulted in a perfect storm of environment for developing supervirus. They're using the language that this is a hemorrhagic fever virus. If that's the case, then it would be very odd that this would be something caused by a coronavirus. That terminology is usually used for viruses in the family of Marburg and Ebola. So this is something that many people have feared, is the development of a rapidly spreading Ebola-like hemorrhagic fever virus. But we have no knowledge of whether that's what's going on here or not. So we don't know if what we're dealing with is a further mutation of the SARS-CoV-2 or related coronavirus, or is it a new threat that's emerging in China?
So even Dr. Robert Malone is stymied by the reports that are coming out, and there are global reports all over. I have a clip of just a sample of some of the headlines from around the world here. Radio Free Asia, CNBC, WION, Medical News Today, all of them talking about hemorrhagic fever.
But he mentioned Dr. Van den Bosch,
yes,
who we covered last year, who warned that a global vaccination program was going to end in disaster with a significant portion of the Earth's population dying.
Right.
What I just heard Dr. Malone say was there's the possibility that the vaccine,
yes,
has actually caused a mutation of the virus, and that mutation is this hemorrhagic fever.
Yes, that allowed for the environment to be created for this new outbreak, whatever it might be, to be able to take off. And so now is the time, though, Rick, is that we have to figure out, is all of what we're seeing out of China propaganda, or is this the real deal this time? Are they secretly dealing with hemorrhagic fever outbreaks in China? And that's why they're rolling out the hazmat suits, and that's why you see flamethrowers in the streets.
Well, there's another possibility, Doc, and that is
we're being prepared for the next phase of the biological war.
Phase two, the sequel.
Yes, that they're going to roll out another virus to kill off the American people. And it's a hemorrhagic fever. People are going to be bleeding out of their eyes and their ears and their nose. It's like Ebola. So that's the other possibility. 2 years ago, China was preparing the world for a coronavirus outbreak that they caused. They created the virus. They released the virus. They put out a lot of propaganda, a lot of videos saying that China was overrun with it.
Right.
To this day, we really don't know if any of that's true. We don't know.
No, we really don't. But we have to assume that at this level that we are at some point of a biological war that's underway. It's been underway for more than 2 years at this point. And so
I'm having one right now myself.
But these things that are taking place right now, we're trying to discern, we're praying, asking the Lord to give us direction on this, because we see what's happened in the past. Is this a repeat, or is this a response? Or another, and I threw this at you earlier today, Rick, is this possibly the response from those against China? If China launched the first wave of the biological attack, is someone else launching a counter strike against China?
And that's another
hemorrhagic fever.
That's another possibility. Let's take a look at what hemorrhagic fever is.
All right. So first of all, Mayo Clinic has a whole web page dedicated to viral hemorrhagic fevers. There's a list of families that fall under this, including Ebola, Marburg, and several others. Some of the symptoms as it starts out, these sound like symptoms you might have if you've got the flu or a cold or even a mild case of coronavirus. Fever, fatigue, weakness, or general feeling of being unwell, some dizziness, muscle, bone, or joint aches, nausea and vomiting, diarrhea. It sounds like the flu.
Yes. I mean, if we go back to that previous screen, the past several weeks here in Florida, it seems like one out of three people have these symptoms.
Right.
Last week, there was several days that we probably had 75% of our staff out sick.
Yes.
And I ended up getting something and missed a day or two. But it was in these same symptoms that people were experiencing.
Now, as hemorrhagic fever advances, though, some of the more severe life-threatening symptoms, bleeding under the skin, in internal organs or from the mouth, eyes, or ears, nervous system malfunctions, coma, delirium, kidney failure, respiratory failure, liver failure. I had someone just the other day that showed had some pictures of people that suffered from varieties of these hemorrhagic fevers, Rick, where you can actually go online, you can look for some of the symptoms where their extremities, like their arms and legs, will actually turn black and blue like they've been bruised. And what's happening is the blood vessels are collapsing underneath the skin, and it's creating that look where your arms would be black and blue.
What about lumps?
Well, and there have been cases of where lumps showed up, too, and as if the body was trying to expel something or trying to get rid of some things. And so
I had somebody tell me yesterday, a local, that last week, as he was battling, whatever this was moving around here in Florida, that his body began to just to shake uncontrollably. He was lying on his sofa, and he said he just began to shake, and he began to cry. And his wife thought he was weeping, and he told his wife, "No, it's my body's crying on the outside, but inside I'm emotionally fine. I'm not crying." But on the outside, he was crying.
Now, his body was responding to whatever.
So when I saw nervous system breakdown, nervous system malfunction, that's the first thing that came to my mind. Is that what he experienced?
Right.
Because it was very unusual. He never experienced anything like that before. I mean, there's a lot of people who are experiencing in the past year or two, experiencing reactions in their bodies that they've never had in their entire lifetime.
Right.
I mean, there is something moving around in the world that has come from a laboratory in hell, and it's affecting people in different ways.
Right. Well, a few months ago when we were starting to do a deep dive on some of the causes of all this, our old friend Bill Gates had thought about the next pandemic. Okay, so if we're looking back, this is from back in November of this past year, Rick, where he was giving an interview, and Bill Gates, he warned that the next pandemic or the next, whatever event that might take place would be a terror attack, okay? So Bill Gates warned that bioterrorism could be a bigger threat than naturally occurring epidemics. And the reason why we bring this up is we kind of touched on this a little bit yesterday when we were talking about Kazakhstan and the stories coming out of there, and we talked a little bit about the lab that the U.S. funded in Kazakhstan, and that the Russians, they basically said, hey, we're back in control of that lab because it appeared that rioters or ne'er-do-wells had taken over the lab.
Right.
Right? I pretty much have the gist of the story, right?
Well, the Russian media reported that Russian troops had seized the lab.
Right.
But the Kazakh government denied that the terrorists ever took over the lab.
Okay.
So, which one is it?
Well, the reason why we bring this up is we're going to talk about that lab again here. And this is an article, this is from Popular Science. This is from way back in 2013. And so Popular Science is talking about the U.S. helping the nation of Kazakhstan build a high-tech bubonic plague lab in Kazakhstan. Now, bubonic plague is in the family of hemorrhagic fever diseases.
Yes.
So when Kazakhstan's Central Reference Laboratory opens in September of 2015, so they're looking 2 years out, the $102 million project laboratory will serve as a Central Asian way station for a global war on dangerous disease. Now, with the stories that are coming out of Kazakhstan this week about possibility, and the Russians were saying this, that there could be a potential leak from that lab. Now, we mentioned yesterday that
there wouldn't have been a leak from that lab if the U.S. government didn't build the lab.
That's right.
$102 million.
Right. So not only does Kazakhstan have a 5,000-mile border with Russia, it also has a 1,500-mile border with China as well. It's interesting. It's well-positioned, you know, on the, if you will, the Silk Road in order for things to move back and forth.
Yes.
And so...
Do you know what the justification was for the U.S. spending $102 million on that lab?
If I remember right, some of the articles yesterday were saying to keep it out of the Russians' hands because all that Soviet technology had been left behind.
Yes.
When the Soviets pulled out.
And their scientists.
Right. And so they said, well, we got to do something with these guys because they're going to go to work for somebody. We don't want them to go to work for the bad guys, so we'll let them work for us.
But isn't that what the CIA said after World War II with the Nazis?
Yeah, let's bring them here, and the Japanese, too, the torture specialists, and bringing them over
so,
here.
So really what the Pentagon did is said, hey, we're going to get all the Soviet biological warfare research scientists, and we'll put them on our payroll.
Right.
And we'll put the labs right there in their hometown.
Yes. So they don't have to move.
We don't have to do Operation Paperclip.
So
we'll put the paperclip on the Russia's border instead of moving everybody to the United States.
Now, of course, the United States, for a lot of people, they may not even be aware that we've been funding labs like this all over the world for a very long time. We've got a lab named after a congressman over in Eastern Europe, the Luger Lab, where they specialize in bioweapons research too. Another lab that we indirectly funded, or maybe even directly funded, was the Wuhan lab in China, and of course Dr. Fauci is the connection on that. And of course Dr. Fauci right now is he's been under the spotlight today in testimony before the Senate today, really trying to drill down on the actions of Dr. Fauci and everything. And so today, Rick, I don't know if you happened to see this video or not. Dr. Fauci was getting pretty frustrated with what was going on. Rand Paul was questioning him. Senator Marshall was questioning him. They were getting some really deep questions into him. There was a lot of, going back and forth. The frustration level boiled over. Here, we got a little clip here of Dr. Fauci showing his frustration. He was caught on a hot mic moment, Rick, commenting about his questioning by Senator Roger Marshall. Watch this.
We look Senator forward to
Marshall.
Reviewing it.
Totally incorrect.
Senator well, we look Marshall, forward to reviewing it.
Senator Marshall, Dr. Fauci has answered you. It is public information, and he's happy to give it to you if you would ask. Senator Moran.
What a moron. Jesus Christ.
Now, I don't know if you caught that right at the very end there, but on the hot mic, he basically called Senator Marshall, what a moron. Jesus Christ, expressing his frustration. So he was caught there, expressing all the frustration that he's
You mean
having.
As somebody questioned him?
Right. And so all he has to do is just show up and answer the questions, and you don't have a problem.
Well, what they're after is his financial records.
Yeah.
And the senator's office can't find the public file of Fauci's financial records.
Right.
And the senator said, the big tech companies are helping you to hide them.
Yeah. You try to go look for them. Try to find the Fauci financial records, And Dr. Fauci says, well, I've, you know, shown my financials for the past 37 years. But
try to find them.
Try to find them. See how difficult it is. And there's a reason why the highest paid public official, which Dr. Fauci is at over $400,000 a year, makes more money than the president. Okay. So he's the highest paid employee of the U.S. federal government.
And that doesn't count the bonuses from Israel.
Right. The $1 million checks that he gets from Israel. So yesterday we were anticipating some new information coming out regarding Dr. Fauci and regarding some information that Project Veritas may have come out with. And we were looking for that yesterday evening and this morning. There is some additional information that came out, but it came up from the GOP Oversight Committee. This is something that was released early this morning that we saw. And basically, this is the tweet here. So if we've released never-before-seen emails showing Dr. Fauci may have concealed information about COVID-19 originating from the Wuhan lab and intentionally downplaying the lab leak theory. Now, this letter was sent to the director of HHS by Representatives Cormer and, of course, Jim Jordan. And they are requesting specific information regarding a period of time from about the end of January to the first week of February regarding information that was going back and forth between Dr. Fauci, Dr. Francis Collins, and others. Did Dr. Fauci know at that time that there was it could possibly be a lab leak from Wuhan? That is the gist of the question there. And so it's a two-page letter from Representatives Cormer and Representative Jim Jordan. Some of the questions that they asked, okay, in this letter, did Dr. Fauci or Collins warn anyone at the White House about the potential COVID-19 originated in a lab and could be intentionally genetically manipulated? So that was a specific question they asked. If these concerns were not shared, why was the decision to keep them quiet made? What new evidence, if any, came to light about COVID-19 between February 1st and February 4th, 2020, to alter the belief it originated in a lab? Did Drs. Fauci or Collins edit the Nature Medicine paper entitled The Proximal Origin of SARS-CoV-2? And would having this knowledge earlier have benefited either vaccine or treatment development? By February 1st, 2020, were Drs. Fauci or Collins aware of the State Department's warnings about Wuhan lab safety? And would this warning have changed the early response to the COVID-19 pandemic? So these are specific questions that Representatives Cormer and Jordan want answered. Now, the letter references a February 1st, 2020 conference call that took place between Dr. Fauci, Dr. Collins, and at least 11 other scientists who convened to discuss COVID-19. It was on this conference call that Drs. Fauci and Collins were first warned that COVID-19 may have leaked from the Wuhan lab and further may have been intentionally genetically manipulated. Again, it's unclear if either Dr. Fauci or Dr. Collins ever passed these warnings along to other government officials or if they simply ignored them. And so if we go to number 21 here, this is the one of the emails that, or not email, but a transcript of that conference call at the beginning of February, Rick, where Mike Farzin, who was one of the other 11 people on that particular conference call, said he was bothered by the Furin site and had a hard time explaining that as an event outside the lab. In other words, he's saying he doesn't see that this could possibly happen in nature. It could happen, but it's highly unlikely. And goes on to say, so given above, a likely explanation could be something as simple as passage of a COVID tissue sample on human cell lines being transferred for an extended period of time, accidentally creating a virus that would be primed for rapid transmission between humans, being gain of Furin site or gain of function and adaptation to human ACE receptors. Just to kind of put this in layman's terms, Mr. Farzin or Dr. Farzin was basically saying this doesn't seem like it's happening in nature. It seems like something has been created, and even puts where he's at as far as things. I'm 70-30 or maybe 60-40 as far as it being created to occurring naturally.
Right? And this communication, this took place in the early weeks of the pandemic.
Right. Now, there was another portion of this transcript as well. This is number 23 for control. This is from one of the other people on that call, from a Bob Gary. And he goes on to say, and this, you got to remember, Dr. Fauci and Dr. Collins were on this call. And so they heard this information from these experts. He said, I really can't think of a plausible natural scenario where you get from the bat virus or one very similar to it to COVID, where you insert exactly four amino acids, 12 nucleotides that all have to be added at the same time to gain this function. That, and you don't change any other amino acid. I just can't figure out how this gets accomplished in nature. So a couple things to note from this, Rick, is that once again, one of these experts on this call saying, I don't believe that this actually occurred in nature. But also something else to notice here, too. They were fully aware that gain of function was occurring. Both the Mike Farzan transcript and the Bob Gary transcript here both list gain of function in this. Now, what's gain of function? That means basically weaponizing the virus.
That's right. So Fauci and Collins have potential criminal liability in this issue.
Now, so this teleconference took place, and then just a few days later, there was an article that came out in Nature Medicine magazine. Okay, so 3 days after this conference call, four of the participants authored a paper entitled The Proximal Origin of SARS-CoV-2, of which Fauci and Collins were sent drafts of this. The authors, who had previously expressed concern over a lab leak and genetic manipulation, suddenly abandoned that theory to insist the new virus had a natural origin. And so within days, Rick, within about 3 days between that conference call and the release of this paper, several of these people that had previously had great concerns about this not occurring in nature suddenly flipped to a natural cause for this.
So what do you think happened?
I think that they were pressured to change their minds, that they were told this is what we're going to say and this is what we're going to do. That's one of the questions that Rand Paul was really probing in on Dr. Fauci today on, which Dr. Fauci did not answer in repeated attempts by Senator Paul to get to the bottom of what happened between that conference call and that article coming out.
Doc, when you go back 2 years to the interviews we did with Dr. Judy Mikovits, who worked for Fauci decades ago at the NIH.
Right.
She described him as a criminal thug, a medical mafia. She was afraid of him. She was physically afraid of him. She purchased a gun because she feared for her life. Now, there's something wrong with that picture when a scientist working for the U.S. government has to purchase a firearm because she fears for her safety from another government scientist. There's something wrong with that picture. Fauci's been getting away with this criminal behavior for decades.
Well, you saw a little bit of that response of Dr. Fauci today in his interchange with Rand Paul. Rand Paul gets under his nerves. I mean, he really, really does. Dr. Fauci, when you see him on Good Morning America or, you know, or all the Sunday morning talk shows, he's America's doctor, you know, he's just good old friendly Fauci, right? But when you start questioning his credentials, or you start questioning his finances, or you start questioning his connection to the Wuhan lab, he can get ugly and mean real fast. Mm-hmm. And he does not, the venom starts to come out.
Well, there's one reason is that Senator Rand Paul is also Dr. Paul.
That's right. And so keep that in mind, too. So what does that all mean? Well, as we start out today's Godcast, we're seeing all these strange stories start coming out of China once again related to the fresh outbreak of COVID, maybe hemorrhagic fever. It took months for us to figure out Dr. Fauci's connection to the Wuhan lab. It wasn't until April or May of 2020 that we really started seeing the connections there. Rick, will we see a possible connection at some point here in the near future where Dr. Fauci is now tied to a fresh outbreak that's coming down?
It's possible. I mean, I wouldn't be shocked by it. But, Doc, it's taken 2 years for somebody, for two members of the U.S. Congress to send him a letter.
Yes.
2 years. So even if evidence did come out next month of Fauci's involvement in another scandal, we're going to go 2 years until two congressmen write a letter.
And I have to ask this question, Rick. Will Dr. Fauci be there when President Harris is installed or whoever the next president
is? Well, he's 81. He's 81 years old. He may retire soon and get out of the picture. It's not fun for him anymore. But he's in so deep. How's he gonna? You know, he's gonna have to destroy a lot of records in his office. That's a federal crime. I mean, you can't destroy federal records. His emails, his contracts, his letters, memos. He's got a lot to cover up. He's got decades of criminal behavior to cover up. So I don't know if he can resign. He may have just ride it out until they put him in the casket and haul him off. But there is something going on in China, whether real or imagined, but the world is being prepped for hemorrhagic fever. That's what worries me. And it's either the vaccination campaign has caused the virus to mutate into a hemorrhagic fever-like virus, or China is releasing a new virus on the West, or the West has attacked China with a hemorrhagic fever.
Well, we know you said in the open, Rick, that the Olympics are just 3 weeks away. Okay.
So why are we sending them?
That's a great question. So why is every country in the world sending athletes, prime, toned, well-exercised, well-fit athletes to Beijing here in 3 or 4 weeks, knowing that these stories are coming out? Now, one thing to keep in mind, we are on a diplomatic boycott with China right now. Mm-hmm. So none of our political leaders, none of our officials, they're restricted. They're forbidden to go to China.
So if there is a virus there, they're not going to catch it because they can't go.
That's right. They're boycotting it. But we are sending our athletes there. And I can't help but think, with all these stories that we've seen, NFL, NBA, Major League Baseball players, soccer players, all getting COVID, all getting sick, some of them having heart attacks either in training or in active play, here we are sending people to China from 180 countries in the world. They're going to be going there. The cream of the crop. Are we going to see Olympic athletes either drop dead from heart attacks, or maybe, you know, start bleeding from their eyes or ears from hemorrhagic fever?
Well, that's possible. But my bigger concern, Doc, is that you would have tens of thousands of people returning to 180 countries.
That's right. Carrying
the virus. Is that the plan? Weeks before, or, you know, shortly before the outbreak of coronavirus, which we now know was the fall of 2019.
Right.
There were military games in China.
Right.
And the U.S. sent troops.
Sort of like the military Olympics.
Yes. Yeah. So we had another Olympics game. Mm-hmm. And some people believe that, well, there's two different narratives. One, China released the virus then, and the American soldiers were infected, and they brought it back to the USA.
Or
the American soldiers took the virus to China and released it and spread it in China. Pick your propaganda. Which story do you want? I don't know. But this does seem to be like a repeat. We have another Olympic Games.
Right.
Another virus. What I'm sensing is that, all right, if you went from October 2019 to March of 2020. That's when things really got pretty bad.
About 6 months, yes. So
yes. So based on that, then we're looking at around May or June of this year, a worldwide hemorrhagic outbreak.
Right.
If the same scenario plays out. Now, remember we said the globalists are going to come back at us with something that's terrifying. They're going to say, you anti-vaxxers, oh, look what you did now. Look at the mess the world's in now. And are you going to resist the next vaccine? People are bleeding out of their eyes and their ears and the nose, and you're going to oppose it? And that's where I see them taking this, Doc.
Right.
That every several years there will be another virus campaign to keep whittling down the resistance to the gene therapy. And that's what I'm concerned about, that we're being set up for this. excuse me. In Bosnia, there is a political leader who is calling for the arrest of the country's top medical doctor, basically the Fauci of Bosnia.
Right.
He wants him arrested.
Yes, and so the president of the Bosnian party, Mirnaz Ajanov, announced the filing of criminal charges against Dr. Edin Derlevic because of his views on unvaccinated persons. And so the president has named Dr. Derlevic and said, in yesterday's guest appearance on N1 television, Derlevic said that citizens should avoid unvaccinated people, and he told all those who have been vaccinated that they do not accept those who have not been vaccinated into their society. Now, due to such statements, the president of BOS, Mirnaz Ajanović, announced that Derlevic would face criminal charges on the first working day. And so here we have the leader of the Bosnian party. Imagine if somebody went and arrested Dr. Fauci because of his statements and because of you know, he's come right out and said, you know, you should avoid the unvaccinated. Yeah. You should separate your families. Don't let, at Christmas time, don't let your unvaccinated family members come over and see grandma one last time.
What if we just had, you know, House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy say, we are pressing for criminal charges against Anthony Fauci. How about just one Republican attorney general saying, we're issuing an arrest warrant for Anthony Fauci? They don't do anything like that here. So I'm impressed with the Bosnians. They're going after these Nazis. And he accused him of being a Nazi.
Yes.
Yeah, he said he gave a Nazi speech.
Right. In fact, another quote from that article, all citizens are obliged to express their gratitude to the host of N1 Syria over the TV show that we're talking about. Because in the show, Novadan, from December 31st, she opposed the inhuman discrimination of citizens by Dr. Edin Derlevic, who sent a New Year's message to the vaccinated not to associate with the unvaccinated. Sound familiar? In a way typical of the most radical Nazis convicted during the Nuremberg trials, which endangered civil peace and caused unrest among citizens throughout Bosnia and Herzegovina. They have a long memory in yes. Bosnia and Herzegovina because they suffered greatly under the Nazis.
And they can recognize a Nazi.
Yes. And so so they are responding in a way that we should be responding here. We should be taking these people and making sure that they never ever inflict their kind of pain on us again. The closest thing we see anyone coming to any kind of threat of that, Rick, Rand Paul today once again called for the resignation of Dr. Fauci. I would say call for the arrest and imprisonment.
Resignation,
of Dr. Fauci.
That's minor. It's resignation.
I mean, it would be like saying, I wish Dr. Mengele would resign. You know, that's the essential ingredient of that. So,
all right, let's take this to another level. If you live in North Carolina, you're probably aware that the U.S. Army is conducting a war exercise in a number of North Carolina counties.
Right.
And this story is from the Raleigh News and Observer. And we've got two quotes from it, and it gives you an idea of what the U.S. Army is practicing for.
So a realistic guerrilla war will be fought across two dozen North Carolina counties this month with young soldiers battling seasoned freedom fighters. According to the U.S. Army, the two-week unconventional warfare exercise will be staged January 22nd through February 4th on privately owned land. It'll be realistic enough to include the sounds of gunfire, they say in blanks and flares, the U.S. Army John F. Kennedy Special Warfare Center and School said in a news release. Exact times, locations, and exercise specifics are not provided, but they do make it a point to make sure you know who they're fighting, Rick, and that's freedom fighters.
Yeah, let's go back just to the other. They're battling seasoned freedom fighters. You know what I see in that? Veterans.
Yes.
Seasoned freedom fighters. That means the target of the U.S. Army will be U.S. veterans.
Yes.
Your army is practicing to shoot veterans. Let's get real about it.
That's exactly what it's saying there. So when it says seasoned freedom fighters, you're talking about people who've had practical military experience. Maybe they've already served in Afghanistan or Iran or Iraq. They've had the actual field experience, or they could even be soldiers today who have not submitted to the current vaccination mandate.
Yes.
You know, and so you see,
or they could be, quote, white supremacists.
Yes.
or white nationalists in the military that the Biden administration is trying to hunt down and push them out of the U.S. armed forces.
But you understand that now that this doctrine is out there, that the enemy is here, that the American people are the enemy.
Freedom fighters.
Yes.
Freedom fighters are, wait a minute, if you're a freedom fighter, you're fighting for freedom.
Right.
Then why is the U.S. Army trying to shoot you?
Because you can't have freedom.
But we stand for freedom. America, we stand for freedom. So why would the Army fight anybody who's fighting for freedom? Isn't that an oxymoron?
It is. So now this operation that they're rolling out is called Operation Robin Sage. And this exercise is serving as a final test for Special Forces Qualification Course training and is placing candidates in a politically unstable country known as Pineland. Now, the candidates face off against seasoned service members from units across Fort Bragg, as well as specially trained civilians, officials said. The setting is characterized by armed conflict, forcing the students to solve problems in a real-world setting. These military members act as realistic opposing forces and guerrilla freedom fighters, also known as Pineland Resistance Movement, the center said. To add realism of the exercise, civilian volunteers throughout the state act as role players. And participation by these volunteers is crucial to the success of this training, and past trainees attest to the realism they add to the exercise.
I got another name for those civilians, crisis actors.
That's right. And so
they show up at mass shootings.
And welcome to another opportunity here. And so, I'm sure that over the next few weeks, we're going to hear of drills, shootings that take place around the country, and it's going to be a drill. And it's going to be something new, something that's going to be popping up here, because they always seem to go along with these massive training exercises around the country. Look in the past and see the correlation between them.
Well, what I see is the U.S. Army is prepping for war against American veterans.
And they're outright about it.
And I'm going to say something to the Pentagon Public Relations Department. If I'm wrong, then deny it. Deny it. Make a statement from the Pentagon. Rick Wiles is absolutely wrong. The U.S. Department of Defense is not preparing to shoot American veterans. I'd like to hear the Pentagon say it, because that's exactly what you people are prepping for. You're prepping to shoot down the very men that wore the uniform of the U.S. Armed Forces and defended this country. And we are freedom fighters. The patriots of this country are freedom fighters. And you have declared freedom fighters to be the enemies, not of the Republic, but of your criminal regime. This needle Nazi regime that's taking over the world. And so anybody that stands for freedom is an enemy of your regime. No, you're an enemy of the Republic. We'll turn this around. You're the real enemy. You people in this new world order, you're nothing but devil-worshipping, Luciferian Nazis. And you're exposed. Millions of people see you for what you are. And you can't hide it anymore. You really think your military is going to go out and shoot down American people? Is that what you're going to do to us? I'd like to see the Pentagon issue a statement. Slap me down if I'm wrong. Go ahead and make a public statement. Rick Wiles at True News is completely off base. The U.S. Army would never prepare to shoot American veterans. Do you think they'll make that statement?
Of course not, because they've already admitted that they're going to. That's what the training exercise is for, Rick. They're training these young men, these young soldiers, to say that your neighbor is your enemy.
The Pineland Resistance Movement. Pineland sounds like
Georgia or North Carolina.
You better believe it.
So, somebody hiding out in the mountains. Somebody with a gun. So,
hey, we'll wrap up today's program with where are they now? Okay, so Gina Haspel, the former CIA director, where is Gina Haspel now? You know, there's bloody Gina. She, you know, as the rumor was, she actually grinned when they were torturing Iraqis in the CIA black sites in the Iraq War.
Yes.
There's a lot of rumors that she kind of had a almost sexual fetish with torturing people.
Right.
Where is Gina Haspel right now?
Well, she is serving right now, Rick, as the senior national security advisor for an organization called King and Spalding.
That's a law firm.
Yes.
Atlanta.
So she landed at a pretty prestigious law firm. King, you were sharing with me earlier, King and Spalding has been around for a number of years.
Over 100 years.
So
goes back, one of their co-founders was in the Woodrow Wilson administration. Years later, Jimmy Carter, his attorney general, was a partner in King and Spalding.
Right.
It's a well-connected law firm. So, what we now know, Doc, is Gina Haspel wasn't shot dead in Germany.
Right. Yeah, she's serving as an advisor at the law firm of King and Spalding.
So when I say that, you remember the election drama, post-election drama?
That she went there to rescue the server or whatever it might
be. Yeah, so she got killed in the gunfire, okay? It was all lies, all propaganda to keep people confused in the post-election drama. Well, there are other people who are serving with Gina in the same law firm. Let's take a look at the next one. Well, there's Rod.
Rod Rosenstein, 25th Amendment Rod Rosenstein. He is serving as partner. He made partner at King and Spalding, the same firm.
Snakestein.
Yes. He is partner with, especially in special matters and government investigations. Well, he would know, wouldn't he?
There's the guy who put a knife in Donald Trump's back as his deputy attorney general.
That's right. And so
this is the guy that appointed Robert Mueller.
That's true.
So. That guy right there. And what a coincidence. He ended up at the same law firm as the CIA director.
Well, you know, I don't believe in coincidences, of course. And so it's another coincidence, though.
What?
that another former deputy attorney general is also at the very same law firm.
You're kidding.
And
well, there she is.
Sally Yates.
Sally Yates will shut my mouth. Now, and she's there, too.
She is there, too. So you've got the former CIA director and two former deputy attorney generals, all with problems, let's say, with the Trump administration.
Oh, she defied the president.
Right. And so all three of them had problems with the Trump administration, and they all wind up at the very same law firm, the very same one.
And just remember, Gina Haspel was CIA, before she became CIA director, she was the station chief in London, all right, and would have had direct access to
The Steele documents?
Yeah, Robert Steele.
Right.
The MI6 spy who came up with the whole hoax, the Russiagate dossier that the FBI used to investigate. You know, the same dossier that Rod Rosenstein used to justify the Mueller investigation.
Well, don't forget, Gina Haspel was also in charge of the torture that went in Iraq.
Yeah, that's the thing. So, when I was saying that was when she was... had that little fetish about people being tortured. Right?
So you've got Gina Haspel, you got Rod Rosenstein, you got Sally Yates. So basically, if you stick your knife in President Trump's back, they've got a place for you. Here's your parachute. You can land right here at this law firm. It just keeps it circulating,
small,
doesn't it?
It's a small, small world, Doc. It's a very small world. And by the way, I don't think I brought the story up. I did. We'll show this one, too. Number 34.
Oh, yeah.
Alan Dershowitz. This is in the Jerusalem Post today. Alan Dershowitz tried to get Donald Trump to give a pardon to Ghislaine Maxwell.
Now, according to the Times, Alan Dershowitz had spoken to President Trump about the possibility of pardoning Ghislaine Maxwell after speaking to her family.
Is Dershowitz Ghislaine Maxwell's attorney?
That's a great question.
Well,
Rick.
He's not.
Or is he still representing Jeffrey Epstein?
Or Mossad.
Right.
He's representing Mossad. Because Jeffrey Epstein was a Mossad spy, and Ghislaine Maxwell is a Mossad spy, and she was handling Epstein. Epstein was not a billionaire. He was an actor.
Right.
He got to play the role of a billionaire who got to rape little girls.
Now, of course, Alan Dershowitz, he also got a massage, too, and so at Epstein's place. And I guess that must have paid off well because he keeps in regular contact with the Maxwell family, Rick.
He is now a Mike Lindell's lawyer.
That's right. And so, but he has regular communications with the Maxwell family. And this whole idea of him lobbying for Maxwell's pardon came as a result of a conversation with Ghislaine Maxwell's brother, Alan. And so,
but Maxwell's father, and his name was not Maxwell. He changed it to a Gentile name.
Yes.
Ghislaine Maxwell and her father are Jewish. He was a spy for the Israeli Mossad.
He was so good of a spy, they buried him on the Mount of Olives.
Yes.
So,
And I think four Mossad... retired Mossad directors attended his funeral. His role was he was a London news publisher.
Right.
Okay. Then he fell off his boat naked.
And that happens.
And the boat was named Lady Ghislaine for his daughter. Then Ghislaine took over the family enterprise.
Got her submarine and helicopter licenses. And
there you go.
So.
And then
she created a whole country in the ocean.
And she's so beloved that a man who's not even her lawyer, Alan Dershowitz, went to the President of the United States in the last days of the Trump administration and begged for her pardon. I'm surprised Trump didn't do it.
I am too, because remember he had that remark that he said,
I wish her well.
She was connected with a pedophile. We wish her well. Oh, well.
Well, he knew her well. That's all we can say. Trump knew her well. That's it for today. We thank you very much for spending this hour with us. Please tell your friends, you ain't never seen a news program like True News. You got to watch it one time, and you'll never be the same. You won't be able to get it out of your brain, all right? Even the people who hate us come back every night and watch us again. Yes. They hate us some more, and we just love it because they love to hate us. They can't get enough of us. But we appreciate our friends, the people who love us and care for us and pray for us. We love you too. And as always, we pray for you and ask the Lord to bless and take care of you. We're in perilous times. We got to take care of each other. And we'll be back here tomorrow. God bless.
God bless you.